Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and Dave Kidd of The Sun. Footballers are media trained to within an inch of their lives, but thankfully, the person behind the player still shines through. Raheem Sterling and Danny Rose are spokesmen for their generation. Ilkay Gundogan's truths are closer to home. When he said Manchester City are not a big team, he was challenging corporate convention, but speaking from the heart. City can still win four trophies, but are we at a tipping point? Now, sorry for the hospital pass. What about Wednesday night? Are they going to go out of the Champions League?
Oh, it's a good first question. They could go out of the Champions League, no doubt about that. Tottenham Hotspur are an excellent team that are capable of scoring at the Etihad, which would make it really difficult for them. But no, my hunch is that City will actually show their mettle and fight back in this one. I think there's no doubt that they didn't perform to the same standard as usual in that game. It was a flat performance. I've heard people say that they played really well. I don't...
Guardiola tried to say that, didn't he? It wasn't convincing many people.
When you compare that performance with the vast majority of Manchester City performances, that was a 6 out of 10 all day long. But no, I think they are good enough to turn it around. I just think tactically, Pep Guardiola needs to keep things fairly simple and just go with the tried and trusted that the Etihad. 4-3-3. Wide men hugging the touchline, plenty of space in those pockets for a De Bruyne or one of the Silvers to exploit and play at the kind of tempo that they usually play. And then I think they probably will have too much for Tottenham, but it's going to be one hell of a game.
Because it is interesting, isn't it, Dave, that Pep seems to have the odd brain fade in the Champions League.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. He seems to have a bit of an issue about it. It's been 8 years, I think 7 campaigns since he got to a final. The 3 consecutive semi-final defeats, Bayern Munich hasn't reached semi-final yet with City. So he's been underachieving for a man of, you know, his calibre and the player, you know, the two clubs he's had in City and Bayern Munich. He's underachieved in the competition, and I think the last couple of years in these all British games at Anfield last year, at exactly the same stage, and at Spurs last week, he's not had the courage of his convictions, which is a really weird thing to say about someone whose convictions are as true and as right as Guardiola's. But he picked a very strange team at Liverpool, I think 4 central midfield players last year. And this year, leaving De Bruyne out was quite staggering, I thought. I was there and I was asking around for some of the people who cover City day in, day out, asking why is he not playing De Bruyne? And because obviously he had injury problems this year, but he has looked in recent weeks as though he's come back to his very best, De Bruyne. So I thought it was a strange team all round last week. Delph playing at left back as well, when he hadn't started a game against any top flight opposition. He'd not started a Premier League or Champions League game all season. Seemed like a strange one as well. They were missing Bernardo Silva for injury. It just seemed like Guardiola got it wrong. You could almost tell it by the way he came out in denial, really, in the press conference, trying to say how well they played, and everyone was looking at each other thinking, no, they didn't. And you sort of you knew, really, that he knew he got it wrong on that occasion. I don't think he'll get it wrong again this time. I think they'll go at Spurs.
They have to be assertive. It was a cautious team selection. I think they'll be more assertive this time.
Yeah. Equally, the Spurs have to be assertive, because you look at their recent Premier League games involving City, people have stood off them. There's been no pressing. essentially they've been allowed to do what they want. And if you do that and give them space, they're going to kill you.
Yeah, they are a very extraordinarily difficult team to play against, Manchester City. Let's get that right. Because if you do go and press them really high up, they're more than good enough to just pass it around you and destroy you. So you have to do it really sensibly. And I think Tottenham did that well in the first leg. It's basically what I'd call a mid-pitch press, where you sort of just retreat to a certain point and then just inside the opposition half, you're really biting at the ankles, looking to pinch the ball back in good areas. Cast your mind back to the Champions League game. They lost against Lyon, Manchester City. That's exactly what happened, time in, time out. Cast your mind back to the Liverpool defeat. Where were Liverpool winning the ball? Just inside the City half and tearing at them. That's the way to do it. Unfortunately, most teams are not quite good enough to live with City over the course of 90, let alone 180 minutes. But Tottenham have a chance. They've got the qualities we saw with that Christian Eriksen pass in behind for Son for that goal. They can open up the best. I still think at the true highest echelon of European football, the City defence is not quite good enough. Doesn't mean they won't win the Champions League, but I think that is the glaring problem.
If Spurs do it, it will be a breakthrough result for them. It's not, I mean, they're not Spursy in the classic sense. Of course they're not anymore, but they do. They haven't won too many of these absolutely massive games. To go there to the Etihad without Kane, and they have done well without Kane over the last couple of months when he's been out the previous occasion, it will be a real, they're going to have to go through a real sort of mental barrier to win this. I'm not saying they can't, but it will be a real, it'll be a real red letter day for Spurs.
And Pochettino as well. We always talk about Spurs being Spursy. I mean, Pochettino is the man that's been in charge of Spurs for a long time now. He could probably do. He's obviously got that big tick from the first leg, nailed it. Can he do it over the course of 180? If he can, then his reputation will soar to an even higher plane.
I was at the Spurs training ground on Friday, and what struck me was actually on the drive in, how many fans there were, Korean fans, were there just hanging around waiting for autographs, trying to stop cars, the whole bit.
They weren't waiting for you, were they?
No. I did give them a wave, though, you know. When you think about it, it made me think, Heung-min Song is the underrated superstar, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he started getting a little bit of the plaudits, you know, he started becoming a little bit less unsung during Kane's last absence when he had a great month or so, didn't he? He was really tearing it up and people started talking about him as being a potential footballer of the year. He's not quite there, I don't think, but he could be on that six-man PFA shortlist quite easily, I think, particularly if he carries on that form now in the next few weeks. He's an outstanding player. He does seem to thrive on Kane not being there, you know, he seems to enjoy having more freedom there. Kane's been playing very well, and I thought some of the stuff he even did in the game when he got injured against City, it's when he's dropping back now in the 10 row and pinging passes. He's an outstanding passer of the ball as well, Kane. But the weird thing is their results have been better without Kane, and because players like Son seem to be thriving without him over the last few months. So, you know, it's not, I don't think Kane being missing is necessarily a massive blow for Spurs.
Looks like yeah, Danny Rose will come back probably. Didn't play at the weekend against Huddersfield. Dele Alli. Now, you know, there's a lot of conjecture about, you know, can he play with a cast on his hand?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in about what's going on in his head. He's not had a season of development, has he? He's almost been a slight regression.
I think you're probably right, yeah. Yeah, we've not hardly spoken about Dele Alli this season. I still think he's among the very best when it comes to breaking into the box to score goals. He's a sensational finisher. I was at the game in the League Cup this year where he was actually outstanding. And I remember he scored a gorgeous goal, breaking through, flicking it into the top corner. You want to see that more from him, don't you? Yeah, no, it has. I would say that Dele Alli has stagnated this season. He's not gone backwards, but he hasn't kicked on in the way that you would want him to. And yeah, he will be a key man in this match because they'll need his bite in midfield. Yeah. But my hunch is that Spurs will also need to score a goal in this game. And we all know that City's thoughts are going to be what happens going forward. So if someone switches off and doesn't track him, he could be the difference maker in this match.
Mm. Danny Rose, you know him well, Dave, and you've written in your column about, you know, you're basically depicting him as probably the most significant player within the Premier League. Can you give us an insight into why you believe that? You know, we've obviously seen his stand against racism. He's spoken very openly about mental health. what's the real Danny Rose like?
Yeah, I'm talking as a man rather than as a footballer. Yes. There. I think the thing with you were talking at the top of the show about Gundogan and being a little bit, you know, about generally the players are generally PR managed within an inch of their lives. And Rose is the absolute antithesis of that. He is not. He will not have that. I've done a couple of interviews with him. The one where he talked about mental health was the two or three of us at an England press day, and that was an outstanding interview in terms of the fact that what he said, you know, laying bare his own problems with depression and the problems he's had in, you know, suicide of a family member and uncle. It was incredibly open, incredibly moving, and I think incredibly affecting, and it must have been a great help, I think, I know it was really, to many people who were suffering mental health issues themselves. He does these things totally unscripted, really. He speaks from the heart. He's a very blunt Yorkshireman at heart. He's a stereotypical Yorkshireman, I'd say, Rose, in the way that people talk about Yorkshiremen, you know, don't suffer fools gladly. They say it like it is. That is Rose all over. And that is so different in football. So when he spoke out about racism the other week, I think it was very powerful that he spoke. He said it, as you might say it to your mate in the pub almost. You know, he said, I'm fed up with this. I've had enough. I can't wait to get out. He's actually probably exaggerating his true feelings. He probably can't. It's probably not true that he can't wait to get out of football, but it made him feel like that. Being dehumanised by those supporters in Montenegro, as it was then, you know, it probably did make him feel like that. And I think footballers speaking from the heart, we don't hear it enough. We still don't. Mm. I think Sterling's been very good. I think Rose, I think he's just a little bit more heart on the sleeve as well. So, yeah, I mean, I hope he continues. I'm sure he will. He said he will. And I hope he does continue.
Isn't it, yeah,
raise these issues.
Isn't it great that the modern-day player feels comfortable enough to speak out in this way?
Yeah.
I think that it's obviously at the moment it's an awful time in terms of the abuse that that players and, you know, people in general are being subjected to, but the one minor positive to come out of it, I think, is that players are no longer afraid to speak up and out against it, and the support that they're receiving, I think, is fantastic too.
It's been a bit of a move away from, you know, I think most players, it's social media, and it might be more light-hearted, but they are finding their own voice in their own ways that, and being less restricted by the clubs, you know, trying to make them bland, really. Rose, actually, not even on social media. He's a completely different animal, really, but at the same, but very, very effective. So I think the whole thing is a positive move if players are able to express themselves as blokes as well.
Yeah. A question from one of the viewers. Paul Fry. Mm-hmm. Llorente and Moura, the Spurs stick with them, or look to upgrade? And is Sissoko really Pogba in disguise?
Well, Sissoko has pretty been the player Pogba should have been for much of this season. He's been the most improved player in the Premier League, I think, with Sissoko. I mean, absolutely tremendous, great attitude, and he uses his physicality in a perfect way now, doesn't he, in terms of surging through the middle of midfield, tireless worker. So, no, he is now a must-pick, I think, Sissoko for Spurs. As for the other two, Llorente can definitely be upgraded. I would personally look to move him on. Although he can still offer something in terms of being a battering ram to knock the ball down for others. But he's lost confidence finishing. Lucas Moura, no, I think he's got plenty to offer, actually. He's rapid across the turf, isn't he?
Very good squad player.
I agree. And I think that in this match against Manchester City, he will be very important. We saw him destroy Manchester United, didn't we, earlier on in the season at Old Trafford with his speed in behind. If City are chasing goals and they leave those spaces in behind the full-backs, between the centre-half and full-back, Moura is more than capable of exploiting those gaps.
For me, the upgrade for Llorente could be Mitrovic. A lot of Premier League clubs are going to be after him. I think he'd be a significant upgrade on Llorente. But, you know, whether or not he'd want to play second fiddle to Kane, as anyone would now, you know, centre forward going there, but I think that's a player that Spurs should be looking at.
You're going to be in Barcelona on Tuesday for the Manchester United tie. What do you expect? Man United outsiders by distance?
They're outsiders, but I don't think it's a great Barcelona side. They've certainly got one very great player in the number 10 shirt. If they can keep him quiet, as they did to a large extent in the first leg, I think United have a slim chance. I assume they'll play Martial. They'll try and attack with pace. this is not as uphill a task as it was in Paris. They were without so many players, including Pogba. They had, I think, 10 players in and around the first choice lineup who were out for Paris. It was such a scratch team, and they were two down. It was an extraordinary win. So this would be less remarkable, maybe more significant because it's Barcelona, but it would actually be less remarkable. I think, you know, it's more doable than I'd have thought it was before Paris. Mm. So even though they haven't been playing well, and they haven't played well since Paris, they've had 6 games since Paris, lost 4 of them, haven't played particularly well in any of them. And there's never debate over whether Solskjaer, you know, should have got the job in the first place. But I do think they do have a chance.
Yeah, because speaking on that, there is a school of thought that actually United got it the wrong way round. They should have sorted out a director of football to look at the big overarching strategy. There was talk about Paul Mitchell, who says he's probably going to still stay in Germany.
Wait till the offer comes in.
Might
think twice then.
But if you look at that as an issue, United really still will be behind in the transfer market simply because they haven't got someone to do the legwork, really. In a sense, was Solskjaer lucky to get the job?
No, he deserved it based on the audition, didn't he? That's the thing. They couldn't not give it to him. Yeah. He did so well, too well, in a way, that Manchester United had no option. Can you imagine? Mm. They, based on what he did, that they rejected him. There would have been an uproar. But I guess
at the same time, was it the right decision? Yeah, still,
was it the right decision in the long term? Who knows? We'll find out, won't we? But I've always felt that the director of football should be aligned in terms of their beliefs with the manager. Mm-hmm. So yes, in that respect, they've kind of got it the wrong way round. But I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a Manchester United traditionalist, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
But is that enough in the modern game?
I think he's a bright guy. I do. I think he's a bright manager. I don't think he's as average tactically as some people would make him out to be. I think he's flexible. I think his core principles are let's play the Man United way, youngsters, width, pace, attacking football. But we've seen in a few fixtures, particularly early on in his caretaker reign, that where he tactically was excellent. He outthought Pochettino for sure in the game at Wembley. That was very impressive. So, no, I think this is a blip. I don't think he actually got a sensational Manchester United squad to work with either. And Mitchell, I think, is a guy that's a good headhunter, isn't he, in terms of players. He'll go out and find the players. I don't know whether he's necessarily a strategist.
I think he became the number one choice for that role when Pochettino was being lined up as the manager, which would...
Having worked
even
with
if
him,
they had have gone, even yeah. if they had have gone full out the Pochettino, whether they'd have got him from Daniel Levy when he's under long-term contract, I doubt. But I think that was, I mean, Mitchell and Pochettino are allies from Southampton and Spurs, although he did leave Spurs, but they didn't fall out. They're definitely close. I think that was the idea with Mitchell in the first place. So I don't know if they've still got their eyes on him. He's a pretty impressive guy. There's plenty of guys around in Europe who could do that job. United do need someone to do it. They're pretty prehistoric, really, in the way they do their recruitment. And Edward Wood's not a football man, and he's botched a lot of deals.
Mm. Pogba, be interested in your insight, Aid, here, where he's having his best season in terms of goals and assists, 13 goals, 9 assists.
Yeah.
A few quite iffy penalties within that
one. Yeah, definitely. Is he
gives the impression of being a semi-detached footballer.
Yeah, I understand what that means, I think.
he's there, but he's not quite there.
I'm a fan of his talent, but I'm not a fan of Pogba the team player. Obviously I'm not privy to what goes on behind the scenes, but you do feel as if it's all about him a little bit. There was that footage from the World Cup where he was inside the dressing room, and he did show amazing leadership skills with a really rousing speech. And you wonder, okay, well, maybe they should channel that a little bit more at Manchester United, where he's seen as more of an individual. But no, with Pogba, for me, I would get rid of him. I certainly wouldn't make him captain. I know that there's a temptation to give him the armband to fend off interest from Real Madrid. But he's just not a guy, in my opinion, that you can rely on. And when the big matches have come around, he has disappeared. I think that much is clear to see. And when he's happy, he's sensational. When things are not going so well, he tends to go missing. For that reason, I would cash out on Paul Pogba and bring in somebody else who I think could offer just as much for probably lower wages.
Mm. I agree with a lot of what you say, but I don't think it will happen. And I think a lot of it's to do with the fact that United are still a commercial entity more than the footballing entity, the way they run. And I think Pogba is, you know, that's the reason why Pogba was brought back, this huge social media phenomenon that he is. Mm. That's not to say he's not a great footballer, by the way. I can see exactly what Adrian says, and I think there's a very good chance that Solskjaer in his heart of hearts might agree with that. But whether it actually happens or not, and United are willing to sell such a great commercial asset, as much as a footballing one, I have my doubts.
Mm. Let's talk about another footballer who hasn't got a shred of ego. Cristiano Ronaldo. Juventus, yeah. Ajax.
Yeah, yeah.
Is his stage again, isn't it?
Yeah, he loves it, doesn't he? He's a sensational. Big game player, isn't he? We talked about Pogba there, not really showing up in a lot of these big games. Ronaldo is the opposite. And yeah, as fantastic as Ajax have been to watch, and isn't it wonderful to see the renaissance there? European football is so much richer for a good Ajax team, that is for sure. But now you'd imagine that Ronaldo will carry Juve into the semi-finals of the Champions League. This is exactly what he was signed for. And given the way that the draw is panning out, I think they've got an excellent chance of reaching the final again, Juventus.
Mm. They've been made to wait for their eighth successive Serie A title. They lost to Spal at the weekend. Closer to home, our domestic title, it is going to go down to the wire. What are your impressions of Liverpool, Dave?
Yeah, I thought they were very good yesterday against Chelsea. I think they've been scraping results recently, and yesterday it was a really thoroughly sensible, serious performance, thoroughly deserved win. And they ground down and beat a good side in Chelsea. So I was impressed with them. I don't think they're going to drop another point. And looking at their last four games, I don't think so. I think it's Cardiff, Huddersfield, Newcastle. I don't think Benitez is going to put up a massive fight. And Wolves at home in the last game of the season. I think they will win every game. Therefore, City are going to have to win every game to do it. My hunch would be with Liverpool after yesterday. I thought it was a significant day. I know City played pretty well and got a good result at Palace. I think Liverpool have just started to look like, you know, like playing at full pelt again after they certainly had a blip when they drew four games out of six, I think it was. They've won five in a row now. They've certainly ridden their luck at times, but then you have to, you know, you make your own luck and you keep going till the end. And that's what a lot of Ferguson's great teams did, winning a lot of games towards the end when they hadn't even played well. That's what Liverpool have done a fair bit of that this season. I thought until yesterday my hunch would still be with City, but now I'm turning my, I think.
Because there's a different feel, isn't there, Aid? Yeah. When you talk about Liverpool and football, it's emotion, it's passion.
Yes.
There's a bit of pragmatism in there now, isn't there?
There is, actually. Yeah, look, their defensive record is unreal. It's off the charts, really, compared to what it was previously. There was a big jump after Jurgen Klopp's first season in terms of improvement at leaking goals. Then Van Dijk comes in, you see a big leap. This season, I mean, they've conceded 20 goals, which is
compared
just
to Man United, 44.
It's just incredible. Van Dijk, for me, absolutely nailed on player of the year. He would get my vote. I know that it's a genuine competition with him and Sterling and maybe one or two others, but for me, Van Dijk would get it. I'm a big fan of this Liverpool side, and I agree with Dave that they won't drop any more points, and City have definitely got the tougher fixture list. I think Liverpool deserve to be champions. Look at it, they've lost one game in the entire season. I think that they are actually the best team in England at the moment. City have got those match winners, that quality, the magic at times, and they've got a sensational manager. But as a team, as a unit, I think Liverpool have grown to be stronger than any other Liverpool side I can remember since I was a kid.
Whoever finishes second is going to be the greatest runners-up in the history of the Premier League, without a doubt. Which is,
yes,
there's not
definitely.
There won't be a stronger second.
Because the standards are unprecedented. You know, a couple of stats. Manchester City, the first in the five top leagues in Europe to score 150 goals. Mm-hmm. You've got Liverpool. Well, that the win against Chelsea was Klopp's 112th win in 200 games. Mm-hmm. a 38-match unbeaten run at Anfield. We're talking about unprecedented standards, aren't we?
And they still might not win the league. It's extraordinary. You know, one of them's not going to win the league, and they're going to be have had a great season. They could easily end up contesting the Champions League final as well.
The Leicester City was the big wake-up call, wasn't it, for the Big Six, and they've all just improved extraordinarily since then. And unfortunately, the rest of the division's not kept pace. What I would say is that there is a bigger gap now than there has been for a long, long time.
There's a big gap between the top two and the other four now, aren't there? I mean, the other four are very, very tight. There's nothing between those four, Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, but the gap between second and third is going to be huge this season.
Yeah, I think the Henderson move from Klopp, that could be a potential game changer as well. I know it's only a minor tactical tweak, but I've always thought that Henderson is a legs guy. He's the box for box guy.
Yeah.
And it wound me up a little bit. As a non-Liverpool fan, it wound me up to see him be the guy that's spraying past his long diagonals. Because I thought, you're not getting the best out of him there. And now that he is playing in that role, it's kind of re-energised Liverpool at this key juncture in the season. Yeah. So that might turn out to be a big
terrific game. I mean, obviously Salah's goal was one of the goals of the season, but it was the breakthrough was because of Henderson's cross, that little dink cross for Mane, which that's what sort of made the breakthrough. That's what brought about the victory, really.
Question from Parik Bharat. It will be astonishing that one of City or Liverpool won't win the league despite playing as well as anybody has. It'll be heartbreaking for that team. How will that team pick itself up again for next season?
I think it will be a bigger thing for Liverpool if they miss out, having done so well because of the history. And Klopp's done pretty well trying to negate all that talk of 29 years of out of league. But if Liverpool play that well, and they do, say if Liverpool finish the season with one defeat, as I think they're likely to, I don't think they're going to lose another game with one defeat and don't win the league, it's going to be heartbreaking for them. Of course it is. I think for City, I mean, it might depend as well if that team ends up maybe winning the Champions League, because I think there's a good chance. Well, Liverpool will be in the semi-final of the Champions League. City have got a 50-50 chance probably. So, you know, that will be a pretty decent consolation prize. Yeah. They've both got real chances there. They're arguably the two best teams in Europe, I would say, actually, as units. I know we've got certain Mr. Messi and Mr. Ronaldo still left in the Champions League field, but I think as actual team units, they're the strongest two in Europe. But I think City will get over it because they've won the league three times in recent years. For Liverpool, it will be more difficult.
Yeah. Do you agree with that?
I do, yeah. I just think it depends what the mentality is inside the dressing room. I think it's one of those where they you'd have to go away in the summer and think, actually, you know what? They can go away to the summer and sit on the beach and think, well, we couldn't have done any more.
No.
I don't think there will be any regrets from Liverpool. No. I think the best way for them to look at it, if they fail to win the Premier League, is, look, we came second best to one of the most extraordinary teams in the history of English football. We couldn't have done any better. I did see there was that image, wasn't there, of the Liverpool shot at the Etihad with a centimetre away, weren't they, from scoring other goal?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if they were to miss out by a point, if that was the defining moment? But Liverpool will have no reason to beat themselves up at all if they don't win the Premier League.
They certainly haven't bottled it. I don't agree with that talk whatsoever. I think all they lack is an absolute top, world-class, creative central midfield player. And they've got very good midfielders, but they haven't got a real star, maybe De Bruyne or something.
Had a silver
like that.
Or a De Bruyne. One of the silver.
One of those.
Or De Bruyne.
One of those, and they're definitely champions. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about mentality of dressing rooms, as you did, Aid.
Yeah.
Chelsea.
Yes.
Where are they now? In their own heads more than anything else.
Well, they're flimsy, aren't they? On the road, that's for sure. Chelsea are. I'm not saying they're broken. But they need it. They can't. The problem is, of course, with this transfer ban, if it is upheld, they can't have this big reboot that they probably need in the summer.
The owner's not around as well. The whole club is a bit of a. It's in a very strange place.
On Chelsea, I can't help but feel that. And there were stories, weren't there, in the press over the weekend that there's interested parties maybe coming in and buying Chelsea off of Roman Abramovich. I maybe feel that might be. the best interests of Chelsea.
I've written that before, totally.
Long term, I think that they, rather than have this owner that's becoming more and more detached from it, bring in someone new money that's passionate, that's got the drive, it's a bit more hands on.
The stadium is going to, particularly everyone's going on about the Spurs stadium, and I know everyone's sick of hearing about how great it is, but Chelsea's is the one that really suffers by comparison. You know, it really is.
Yeah,
something from the 80s or 90s, isn't it?
Yeah, they need a striker, don't they? They need probably a new manager. I've been underwhelmed by Sarri. I thought he was better than he's shown this season. Tactically, definitely not enough flexibility from him. And at the back, you look at Alonso. I just don't think he can defend. Emerson is all right, nothing special. Luiz can't be relied upon. And Azpilicueta is aging, as we saw against Man City in that 6-0 thrashing. He's looking vulnerable. And I don't think the goalkeeper was worth the money that was spent on him. So there are lots of issues to address at Chelsea.
Yeah, but that's been picked up with a question from Stefan Adams. He said, I said back in August how worried I was with Luiz and Alonso in the back four. We're now in mid-April and for me, Luiz has got worse. What's the future, if any, for any of the current back four? He said, for me, three out of four have had their best days.
Yeah, maybe Rudiger's the one that might stick around. And Christensen, they've got a lot of time for, haven't they? But yeah, I think they probably need two new fullbacks there, certainly. And another centre-half, yeah.
But they can't get any.
They can't get any. they've got a lot of good young players in the squad and out on loan, but I'm not sure if there's too many defenders amongst them. There's the boy who's been at Wigan, the fullback, who's been excellent by all accounts.
Yeah.
But whether he's ready to start for Chelsea next season or not, I think there's an awful lot of Chelsea fans who think it could be really exciting if they do get a transfer ban and they do have the manager in place, whoever that might be, whether it's probably not Sarri, who is willing to really promote youth and to sort of try and build a team around Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi and players like that.
Yeah, because there's some talk about Jay De Silva, the fullback, also. I think he's a Bristol City for the moment. But that would be a step change in attitude, wouldn't it? And on that point, you mentioned Hudson-Odoi, Dave. He was picked against Liverpool, which is a big statement of intent from Sarri. Or was it? Was it just like, blimey, my job's in danger, I better do something to keep the fans quiet?
Cynically, I think that you could be right. and we mentioned it off air actually earlier that he played on the right, where he prefers to play on the left. He has suddenly started picking. I think he's played three Premier League games in a row now. And he hadn't started before in the league. You do get the impression that Sarri's doing it a little bit because he knows every time he doesn't bring him on or he's not involved, the fans are right on his back. And Chelsea fans, to be fair to them, don't usually go for the manager, and they've really gone for Sarri on a couple of occasions. That Man United Cup match on the Monday night when they really went for him badly. I've never seen Stamford Bridge turn on their own manager like that. So he's fighting a losing battle. And I think he does quite a good impression of not caring what the fans say. And he'll say he doesn't care what the fans say, but anyone would when they're getting it in the neck, like as he has done. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of that's the reason why we're seeing Hudson-Odoi in the team now.
Yeah. I'll intrude a bit on private grief here.
Oh, go on.
Arsenal and Aaron Ramsey.
Yes.
You must have split feelings about it. He's playing so well, yet he's going to leave.
Yeah. I think that he will be given, whenever his final game is, I think he'll get a standing ovation and he will always be welcome back at Emirates Stadium. As a genuine club legend, actually, I think he's been outstanding, contributed in cup finals, of course. I can't speak highly enough of Ramsey's attitude this season. There's obviously been some kind of big disagreement behind the scenes in regards to his contract. I don't know which side is the guilty party in terms of the club or him or his representatives. But they've had all this off-the-field issues, yet it hasn't impacted on his performance level at all. If anything, he's got better since the news came out that he would join Juventus. He's played with no fear of getting injured. I think he's been sensational. And actually, what is heartbreaking for Arsenal fans is that I don't see very many players around European football's top leagues that can offer what he can offer in terms of the grit, the energy, the legs in central midfield, the leadership from central midfield, and the goals and the chaos that he causes inside the box. They don't grow on trees, those kind of players. And that's why Juventus have given him the big bucks.
cut off a nose to spite their face a little bit. Because I got the impression, certainly, a few people I've spoken to earlier in the season, that when Wenger went, there was a feeling within the club that basically it had been run like a holiday camp for a good few years. Yeah. And they wanted to put a marker down and show that they were going to be tougher with their players. They weren't going to indulge them. But Ramsey was the wrong target because he's a very good pro and a very good footballer, and his professionalism, as you said, has shone through in the way he's played when he knows he's going to leave anyway.
Yeah, I would say of all the Arsenal players, and I would include Lacazette and Aubameyang in this, the most irreplaceable Arsenal player is actually Aaron Ramsey because he's got quite a unique skill set. So it is a devastating blow, but it is what it is. Arsenal have to rebuild.
Mm. Looking forward to Thursday, Dave. Arsenal are in Naples. They're poor away from home. Let's not beat around the bush. Emery's talking about that as a 50-50 game. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the 2-0 lead's a good. It's a good cushion to have. That's a really nice scoreline to go over there with. Napoli's a pretty hostile place. If you're going there with a dodgy away record, you're going to feel it when that crowd get on your back. I think Napoli have gone downhill a bit, and I think Arsenal will score and go through actually. But it's a tough one. It was a tough draw. They did very, very well in the first leg. It was a great result.
Yeah, no, it was a terrific performance. It was really aggressive. It was assertive. And yeah, it's just the one regret that Ramsey actually missed a great chance to make it three, didn't he? Although Napoli had their chances. I thought that Mertens was a bit disappointing in Signica getting offside. What worries me, and we saw it at Everton, we saw it in the game against Napoli, in behind the Arsenal fullbacks, so many runners are getting in. And that, I think, is the problem area for them in this fixture. I can't say with any confidence that I fancy Arsenal to win the game. Maybe even draw it. I think they might lose the game. It's just whether they'll score the goal and get through. That is how I sort of see it panning out. But it's a toughie. But I do tend to agree with Dave on Napoli. I was a bit underwhelmed by them. And on Koulibaly, who was a bit of a rock defensively, but he's such a rough diamond, isn't he? He is no Van Dijk. For those people that don't see him regularly enough, he's kind of put on that same pillar, isn't he, as Van Dijk.
Well, the money talked about for him is massive.
I think as a defender, he is right up there in terms of making blocks and clearances and doing all the rugged stuff. But he's so unpolished, it's untrue. He doesn't look like a player that's worth £130 million or whatever. So we'll have to wait and see. That they'll need him to play well to keep Arsenal out.
Dave, another question. This time from Phil Scott. How can Newcastle keep Benitez while Ashley owns the club?
Yeah, I think it might depend really whether Benitez gets any better offers because he enjoys working and he enjoys the love he gets at Newcastle. He enjoys the politics. I think he quite enjoys being the folk hero against an unpopular owner. He had it at Liverpool for a while as well. I think he enjoys the intrigue. I think he quite likes that job despite the obvious, financial restraints you're under working for Ashley. It depends whether, I think for personal reasons, he still wants to work in England. He's got child school and education here. I don't think he's going to want, therefore, to move abroad. So there may only be, say, 10 jobs that you would say were better than Newcastle, given, obviously, the financial restraints at Newcastle under Ashley. It's whether any of those become available. I thought maybe, possibly if Leicester had gone for him or had waited till the summer and wanted him, then maybe he might have gone to Leicester because I think they've got a little bit more ambition, even despite not being the size of club, maybe, of Newcastle. But it's whether any of those jobs do come up and whether any of those clubs do come in for him. I mean, Everton's one that he's always been intriguing, whether he might go to Everton, having obviously managed Liverpool. That has always been a possibility. I don't get the impression that Silva's going to be bombed this summer now. They've had a few decent results until the weekend. So I think Benitez will still be there. I don't think Newcastle under Ashley is quite as bad a job as some Newcastle fans think it is.
Because Newcastle always reminds me a little bit of a superannuated version of Leeds. Someone's going to go in there at some stage and get it right. And when he does, that place is just going to go bang.
Well, he is getting it right to a degree, isn't he?
That's why I think there'll be a great club to take over.
No, definitely. I mean, it is remarkable, really, that he hasn't been able to find a buyer, because I do think that it could explode, and Rafa will be really reluctant to walk away from it, won't he? Of course, the issue is if new ownership does come in, they often want their own people. Mm. So
but I think if you come into Newcastle with a new owner, if you did, and then you bombed Benitez,
that'd be crazy. I agree with everything Dave said, really, about Newcastle. I don't think there are many better jobs out there for him. Okay. He would get more cash elsewhere. But no, he's doing okay, and I think he'll stick it out.
Mm. Cardiff at Brighton on Tuesday. Relegation decider?
Yeah, it probably is. I think if Cardiff win, I think they've got a great chance of staying up. And Brighton are, you know, the team that, you know, people always talk about proverbial falling like a stone. It doesn't often happen, actually, as often as people think, I don't think. But Brighton have, you know, they were home and dry midway through the season, weren't they? They, you know, in the high 20s points wise, and they've hardly won a game since. And they beat Huddersfield at home, is the only one they've won in the league in the last few months. They're having a confidence crisis. They were really let down by Knockhart. Yeah, it would have been a bad result to lose at home to Bournemouth anyway, but to have lost 2-0 is one thing. To lose 5-0 after that brainless red card, it's a worry for Brighton now.
Yeah, it was the worst defeat at home since December 1973, which tells you everything.
Yeah, they've had some bad years in between.
And they've played some good teams in the Premier League and not taking that kind of spanking. So now Cardiff have got more spirit about them, really. Mm. The issue I've got that they've got is Sol Bamba. I think when they lost him, that was a killer blow for them, really. Have they got it in them to score enough goals to win the game at Brighton? They might only need one, given how flat they've been going forward. Now, I think this could go to the wire, because Cardiff's running is a lot kinder than Brighton's.
They've got to win. A draw probably is enough for Brighton, I think.
Yeah, because Cardiff got Liverpool at home after that, Fulham away. With great respect, that's probably 3 points for them.
Only one on Saturday morning. You never know.
Palace at home, then Man United away last
Saturday. Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of winnable games there, certainly. So, yeah, if they win at Brighton, I'd fancy Cardiff stay up.
Mm. Neil Warnock, if he keeps them up, you know, a lot of people say that makes him manager of the season with the group that he took up.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
It would be a heck of an achievement. But look,
he'd agree with it, by the way.
He would definitely agree with it, yeah. No, I think he's done a great job. No, I wouldn't have him as manager of the season. This is a year where we're talking about two of the greatest teams, Liverpool and Manchester City, two of the best teams in Europe, two of the best we've seen for many seasons. I would probably go with Jurgen Klopp as my manager of the year. But Neil Warnock has done himself proud, and I'm really pleased for him, actually. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but in his previous stints in the Premier League, it didn't happen for him. He looked a bit out of his depth. This time around, I think there's been more positives than negatives for Cardiff. So, like I said with Liverpool, if it doesn't happen, they can go into the summer break and not beat themselves up. I don't think Cardiff should do the same if they go down either.
I think Cardiff and Huddersfield were everyone said they would go down, those two clubs, you know. And Cardiff so overachieved just to even be in the race now, whereas Fulham have underachieved and they've gone down with Huddersfield. People probably thought that's where Cardiff would be.
Yeah.
They've done an awful lot better than Fulham with a lot less money. I think Warnock can hold his head up high in many ways. He's an abrasive man on the touchline, as we all know. He's got different sides to him. I've found him to be very kind on occasions as well. Well, you know, people are more complex than they're made out to be, or certainly more complex than they can often look on the touchline and when they're screaming at referees. But I wish he would tone that down a bit. I don't think he does himself any favours. And it's you know, over the years, his treatment of referees has been pretty appalling. And I wish he could cut that out, because he's a better bloke than that, actually.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, that case in point, after the Chelsea game, when he did the double teapot bit,
You felt for him though, didn't you? They were too shocking.
They were, but I just looked at that and to me, it came across as almost like, look at me. Yeah. And it was a bit of self-pity in there.
Yeah, there was.
And I thought, look, your role now is to get into that dressing room and pick your players up, not and mess around in the centre.
They've had an awful season. The Salah thing is, it was a completely, the Emiliano Salah incident was something that no Premier League managers really had to deal with quite that sort of thing. And that was an appalling weight on his shoulders as well. That doesn't excuse the way he behaved that day, and that has been the way he's reacted. You know, referees are well aware of it. It doesn't do you any favours. Referees are human beings. They are going to, you know, they're going to react to that kind of thing.
This ties into the question from Vernon Grant. Neil Warnock, infamy, they've all got it in for me. Paranoia? Officials are only human. Who could blame them if one or two did have something?
That's kind of the point I was making, really.
Yes, but then you've also got the other side of it where if you moan, complain often enough, you know, think about Wilf Zaha with the way that he came out and was moaning about the treatment he was getting. Suddenly he did pick up a lot more penalties. Referees suddenly weren't calling him out for diving inside the box. So there is something to be said. History tells us that if you moan loud enough, that referees will maybe subconsciously listen as well. So it can work both ways.
What about general standards of refereeing, Dave?
I think it's a real mixed bag. You look at the stats and you realise how different referees within the Premier League referee football matches entirely differently. You know, some give twice as many fouls as others. It's extraordinary that the way, you know, I don't think you want consistency. I don't think it's going to ever happen. I don't think you even want that. I don't want robots refereeing. I don't personally want VAR, but I think there's been so many bad decisions this season, so many glaringly bad ones that, and the Cardiff Chelsea was up there. Those two incidents were up there with the worst. I thought they were the shocking decisions by the linesman and the referee for those two incidents that swung the Cardiff Chelsea game. You understand why VAR is coming in, even if like me, you don't think it's going to be good for the game.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Vertonghen at Tottenham said, look, VAR next season will produce 40 more penalties.
40 more penalties, yeah. It probably will. Yeah, it probably will. It's what I think. I don't know none of us know yet how the Premier League is going to implement VAR. I find it unbelievable, actually, that in the FA Cup, we are not following the style that we saw in the World Cup, in the Champions League, where the referee goes to the monitor at the side of the pitch and reviews their own decisions. I absolutely despise the notion of watching a ref pointing to his ear, effectively letting someone else overrule him or not. And I just think that's wrong. So I desperately hope that we get the pitch side monitors for referees to go and look at their own decisions. The problem with that is, from what we've seen so far, particularly with handballs, is that when they do watch it in slow motion, it always looks worse.
Everything looks incriminating in slow motion, you know, handballs, tackles, etc.
But yeah, I just want... I know that you don't want referees to second-guess every decision that they make, but I think that they should have that facility whereby I'm not sure... Mike Dean at the weekend in the Burnley game, I'm not sure I'm going to go and have a look, rather than being told about it and letting someone else decide from a studio. I think that is wholeheartedly wrong. So look, it's too much confusion at the moment about VAR, and I hope we don't mess it up.
Technology in sport will always change the nature of the game in some ways or other that you haven't even thought about before you actually implement it. We're starting to see that. The handball, and Rose's handball against Man City, I don't think anyone who's played football thought that was a penalty. I think a lot of referees did. I didn't see any ex-players saying it was a penalty. Under a letter of the law, the way they're doing it, maybe, but it just didn't feel like a penalty, did it? And I think you're going to be, in terms of the 40 more penalties, so 20 of them will be for handball.
Yeah. I do feel for referees because we expect them to be perfect, just a bit like us now. I know we're... So we're going to prove that.
Yeah.
Predictions for the last four of the Champions League, please.
Well, Liverpool for sure. I will go for Juventus to beat Ajax. I think the Ronaldo factor make the difference. So Liverpool, Juventus, City will turn it around. And yeah, I think Manchester United will lose to Barcelona, even though it would be a much more entertaining game. So the big four, I guess.
I hate predicting Champions League knockout games. The last couple of seasons, they've been absolutely mad. So I say with any confidence whatsoever. I'll say Liverpool against Barcelona in one semi-final, and I'll go for two shocks in the other one and say Tottenham Ajax.
Not bad. For me, it's also time for the head to rule the heart. My semi-finals, Liverpool-Barcelona and City-Juventus. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.